and welcome to episode 29 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today, we'll be talking to Stephen Bonacore about Stronghold games, including Terraforming Mars, Great Western Trail, and other upcoming releases. But first, we'll go off topic, starting with some news announcements and feedback.
Thanks, Josh. Big news in patrons this week. Wow, overwhelmingly awesome. So our friend of the show level is full now with Jade Pedersen and Shane Poole completing the fivefecta. I think that's a thing, right?
You just made it one.
Penta?
Yeah. Well, pentafecta? I don't know. Anyway, thanks Emil Jiljam, Lucas Hartso, and Charles Finch for being friends of the show as well. We also have a number of new patrons. Joss Arntz, Michael O, C. Marie, Daniel Shepard, Sean Kelly, and John Merkel.
Did you mention Jade Pedersen and Shane Poole?
I sure did.
Oh, I don't know.
But we can mention them again.
I've just blanked out somehow there.
No.
We're really good at that.
Yes. All is good. We've also met our $40 goal, which means a giveaway every month. So we have a giveaway every month. This will start and stop on the second week of every month. We'll find our cadence quickly, I promise. And thank you guys very much for helping us meet that goal so quickly. We love giving things away, and this allows us to do that. The next goal I have set at $100, and the reward for that isn't so much for the people who listen, but what I want to do is any money we make once we hit that $100 goal will be 10% of all the funds we make on Patreon. I'm going to donate to the Jack Vassil Memorial Fund. If you're a fan of the Dice Tower, you'll know that this is a charity for gamers and funded by gamers. So it's essentially helping gamers in need because of that community. And I think it'd be cool to be able to give back to the gaming community. They have this all set up, so we're going to help them out with that. Let's see. New interview. There's a new web exclusive interview up right now. This is for John Zinzer of AEG Games. He has a Kickstarter going right now, Thunderstone Quest. This is AEG's first Kickstarter. And we talk all about Thunderstone Quest. We talk about what brought him to use AEG. It is a web exclusive right now, so you have to go to the website to listen to it. The only reason I'm doing that is because all of the Fridays are full for this month. So, and I didn't want to put another interview in the stream until it has its place. So it will go live, I believe, on the 17th. Of this month. It would be in the stream. So if you don't listen to it on the website, you can listen to it there. But Thunderstone Quest sounds like a really cool game. I backed it on Kickstarter. It's super funded right now. So that was a fun interview to do. Let's see here. Josh, did you do a weigh-in today?
I did, yes. I'm 172.7, down 3.1, and 10.6 overall.
All right. Have to do this off the top of my head and remember 191.7, so down 2.7 and 23.9 overall. So I think I did that math right. I forgot to
You'll find out yeah. next week.
And what lots and lots of people are listening for, also, we've been getting a lot of feedback for our Gloomhaven contest giveaway. I will get that right, I promise. And a lot of people are saying that this giveaway brought them to the podcast, but they enjoy the podcast, so they're listening because they like the content.
Yes.
And for that, we appreciate everyone listening. We hope that our numbers don't go plummeting down once we give away Gloomhaven. I promise if I had 120 boxes, which is about how many entries we have right now, I would be giving out 120 of these because you guys are awesome. I only have one, though. So this week, because we're going to be doing giveaways every single month, and because there's so many people entering now, I've created a form on our website that you can get to by going to tabletopgametalk.com and click the giveaways button in the upper right corner. All I really need is your first name, last name, email address, but the more you fill out in that form, the easier it is for me to keep track of things. If you've done an iTunes review, if you've done a Board Game Geek Fanning. If you've done any of that, there's places for you to fill in your names there so that I can calculate exactly how many extra entries you have. And you'll be able to get a link that will tell you exactly how many entries you have in the contest if you do this. You have until 6 o'clock Saturday the 11th to fill this out and have it qualify for an entry. If you don't do it by then, it means that I'm going to go in and do it for you. So you're going to get an email saying, hey, here's your magic link. But hopefully you'll be able to do that for me, because if you do, that's going to be worth 3 entry points, because holy cow, it's going to save me so much time. If I have to do it, then there will be no entry points for this particular week, but all your other entries will count. Again, a reminder, we're covering shipping if you win and you're in the continental 48 states. If you're outside of that, if you win, I will contact you and we'll figure out how to do shipping. I believe that is it for the Gloomhaven contest. Remember, next week is the last chance for you to enter. We are taking entries up until 6 o'clock Sunday the 12th. So if you haven't emailed us for our first show or our second show, you can still send those in and I'll still count them up until Sunday the 12th or Sunday the 12th at 6 o'clock Central Time. But otherwise, we're good to go on this, and I'm excited to see who wins that. Coincidentally, we're going to jump forward a little bit. Next week, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to do an episode on drinking games.
Oh, I cannot wait. I cannot wait. Because you guys had so much fun that last time when you just spontaneously got drunk and I was like stone cold sober. And I was like just sitting here in silence while you guys like yabbering on. I was like, no, I'm missing out on the fun.
Yeah. So we're going to pregame that episode a little bit.
Yeah.
We're just warning you, it might be a little sillier than normal. And it also includes our contest drawing. So We'll be good enough. We'll be able to figure out who's going
to
win.
Oh, God. I'm worried about the week after when we weigh in. We're going to have to really cut down and do a lot of exercise. Jeez.
We'll be good. We'll be good. Yeah. So, yeah, just warning you, next week should be fun all around. And this may or may not be coincidental to some holiday where people wear green and drink a lot. I'm not even going to get into the whole political nature of that. It's a Chicago thing to celebrate on that particular day. So, iTunes reviews, we got a lot of them. I'm just going to try these. Let's see. Handles are so tricky to read out loud. But JolerBear87, YXYSG, Sweater Stretcher, Rollinsimic, D6C Marie. Sheena mentions that she loves the conversational tone of the podcast and that it includes a woman, although Kitty hasn't really said anything yet. Say hi, Kitty.
No. You can't make
me. We love having Kitty here too. I think that it was an accidental thing, but the combination of how this all worked out I agree. I couldn't do this without you two. So, continuing on before I get all sentimental. Dieter 36.
Are you not going to read the little plug you put in here?
Right. Sorry. Yes.
I'm glad Kitty did join the podcast for moments like this.
Why don't you plug it?
All right. If you enjoy hearing me talk, like I haven't done most of this episode, but I will. Trust me, I will.
At some point.
Yeah. I have a new podcast. Me and my sister started a podcast called Fresh Baked Books, where we talk about books and baking from books. Yeah. And if you like either of those things or both of those things, you should come check us out. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you found this, you can find us too.
Yep. And she's using my equipment, so it still sounds fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So I blame all the equipment for how good we sound. all right, moving on. Not that wasn't important. And we will plug that on future episodes as well. I like it too. Yep. Dieter 36, The Great Trash Heap, Benjamin 7423, and Sean P. Kelly. He says he's still on the fence whether or not Josh's accent is real. I'm fairly sure we're starting a new birther conspiracy here.
Bloody hell, governor. 100% British accent. What are you saying?
I'm going to have
chim chiminy.
We're going to have to see a birth certificate. So I'm just saying.
I think I misplaced it somewhere.
Yeah, sure you have.
Do you know what the funny thing is? It doesn't match my passport. So now we're really getting into best conspiracy. I had to change my name.
Nobody tell the current administration.
There's a whole story. I'll say that another time.
I'm actually interested in knowing this one. I should also note that Sean is one of the hosts on Gaming and BS, a podcast that I listen to every week, and a podcast that in no small part is the reason this podcast exists. I love listening to them. I love just kind of the banter back and forth. The whole topic idea of what we're doing with board games, they do that with role-playing games. And I'm like, that's a really kind of an interesting way of approaching board games instead of doing a review podcast or, you know, talking really like every other board game podcast out there, you know, kind of focusing. I like that we do topic level stuff. So thank you, Sean, for supporting us. Thank you for being a patron. Thank you for inspiring me to do this. Thank you for the two episodes of Bonus BS that you did that explained how you do your podcast so I could steal all of that stuff. It's really appreciated. So check them out, Gaming and BS, if you're interested in role-playing games at all. It's great stuff. They're not G-rated. I would say it's more of a PG-13 adult language type of show, but it's still fantastic.
All right, moving on with our feedback from Mish, our inspiration for our last episode. Just finished listening to episode 28. Great episode. Thank you for devoting so much time to responding to my thoughts and questions. I like the advice you gave Chris about finding the right gaming group and then holding on to them. There's something special in that.
I would agree. So thank you, Mish, for inspiring that last episode, really.
Yeah.
So the next four-ish, I picked some of the questions that we got. So this isn't so much feedback as answering some of your questions, because we have a lot of them.
We do. We need to get through them.
So these are going to be fun.
Starting with Teng Yang, just finished listening to this week's podcast. I'm glad that you're inquiring for listener questions. Kind of perfect, since I'm new to gaming. I was just at the local game store for the first time and was pretty overwhelmed with the selection. How do you determine which game to purchase when looking for a new game? I'm an artist by profession, so with no prior knowledge of most games, I'm often drawn to a particular game based on its box art and presentation.
So I'm curious from you guys, because I know what it takes for me. It's like, oh, it's new. I don't own it. But that's not very helpful. What do you guys look for? If you're in a game store and you're looking, like, what?
Well, it helps that I'm starting to know the kinds of games that I like. So I'm kind of looking for party games, gateway games that I can draw other non-gamer people into. Because that's what I like to do is, you know, pulling new people into it. And also, I've started to, because I'm new as well, and I don't know enough, I've started to use like kind of authoritative people. Like I'll go to Dice Tower and look at some of the reviews or top tens they've done for party games or whatever, and use that to kind of help me, and that really does help a lot.
Yep. What are you getting, anything?
Usually when I'm buying a game, it's something that I've already played. Either they had it set up at the store, somebody there was teaching it, I played with a friend and I want my own copy. I'm not really much of a explorer on my own, I'll say. But I still have a lot of games.
Yep. And I will say that most game stores have demo copies of games. And most of the time, they're willing to teach you. So a lot of times you can go in and say, hey, what do you think about this game? And if it's not busy and they have open play area, they'll be like, oh, yeah, let me teach you this game. So that's a good way to go. Ask the store employees. Most people who work at game stores love games and they love to talk about it.
And if you have a game that you like and say, I really liked this game because of this, they will say, oh, well, these three other games have a similar mechanic. You might enjoy them as well. Let me show you one or all of them, depending on how much time they have, how busy it is.
Yep. Now, and honestly, what I do is I kind of do the same thing Josh does, is if I see a game, well, I do the same thing Tang does too, is if it's pretty, I'm more likely to buy it. Yeah. But I will also look, anything that says Dice Tower Essentials on it, you can't really go wrong with that. Even if it's not a game that is in your, you know, normally wheelhouse, you're probably still going to enjoy that game for what it does. He doesn't really put his stamp of approval. He being Tom Vassell doesn't really put a stamp of approval on games that aren't good. So, but not everything has that. But yeah, just Google it. Google it. Go to Board Game Geek and type in the name and see what other users are saying about it. See what the ratings are about it. Some games are really, really pretty, but they're just not that great. Some games don't look like much, but they're really, really awesome. So you never really know. And when in doubt, pick up Pyramid Arcade. It doesn't look like much, but if you get your hands on it, there's just unlimited play in that box. And the pyramids are awesome.
All right. From Bernard, do you have a favorite genre of games? And if so, what do you... Let me try that again. Why do you think that is a genre you are drawn to the most? What do you think it says about you that you like this genre the most? I work as a psychologist, so I'm always interested in the psychological aspect of things.
I like this. I like a psychologist asking us to psychoanalyze ourselves.
I mean, I'm always a big fan of the point salad puzzle games because it feels a little bit like you're playing against yourself more than you're playing against other players. I really like to play the board because I know that I'm drawn into the more fighty aspects of games, and I don't necessarily like that about myself. So I like the games that minimize that quality of myself. Like,
I'm starting to lean that way as well. I've historically been a very competitive, gamer, whether it be video games or board games. And I've really enjoyed things like Risk, but it brings out those qualities, like you say. And I think these days I'm thinking, like, actually, co-op games are amazing. Like, when we've been playing Pandemic Legacy together, like, the memories we've had and just really all working together and kind of all winning and losing together, I that was so much less tension in those games. And it was just so enjoyable that I'm really starting to skew towards games like that.
Yeah. I like asymmetric games. They're, where you don't start out as the same. Everyone has like a unique ability or a unique something about them. Or any game that has player/character development in it. For me, I like that because I like exploring the mechanics of things as much as the game itself. So anytime I can say, oh, I played this character, I can play the same game again, but I can play it from a different angle, that's going to draw me to that game. A lot of dungeon crawlers, are kind of like that. And, that's what draws me to those types of games. And why? I think I just like studying systems. I like just seeing how the different rules work and how someone was able to balance something.
Cool. So we've got one from Jason Strong. What's your guilty pleasure game? One that maybe doesn't fit the mold of a game you typically play, but you'll never say no when someone wants to play. Mine is Monopoly Deal. Even though I hate Monopoly because my older brother would always con my younger brothers into trading properties that would complete a set for him with the promises of free stays. Monopoly Deal is easy to learn, quick to play, and my wife will always play it with me. And beats me a fair deal as well.
Yeah. Before we answer this question, I will say Monopoly Deal is a great game. I played it with my parents as well. And I own a copy of it. I never bring it out, but I don't know why. Because have you guys ever played Monopoly Deal?
I haven't. Is it just the cards?
It's just the cards, but it's just different. It's not Monopoly. It's
having the cards.
Yeah. Same art, but it's a completely different game. It's actually, I would say it is a good game where Monopoly was a game.
Yeah.
My guilty pleasure, I think, is euchre. I love euchre. And it's a very Midwest thing. And outside of the Midwest, you might not even know what euchre is. But it's just the simplest game. Heck, it could be classified as a drinking game. It's not. There's lots of euchre tournaments and stuff. But it's a college game in the Midwest. And I will always play it. It's four players. It's a lot of smack talk. It's
a trick taking game.
It's a trick taking game.
Spades or hearts or any of those other ones.
So that's what I like.
Whist.
What about you guys?
Do you want to go first? I'm struggling here. I've got one, but I want to use a different one.
I would say I'm a big fan of a lot of dexterity games. I feel like they kind of get a lot of.
It's not a real game or Jenga.
Like, yeah. Are there any ones that people wouldn't have heard of as readily as something like Jenga that you've played before than liked?
Well, you used to play Sticks one or something, right?
Yeah. I always forget the name of this game.
It's the one where you have to pull out sticks and marbles are falling.
Oh, Kerplunk? Oh. No, yeah. That wasn't the one I was talking. I like Kerplunk, but that's not. That one is even too luck based. There's a little bit of strategy to it, but. Not as much. I'll figure it out again. Josh, you go.
I'm going to have to use the one I didn't want to use because I always mention Warlight. I mean, it's more of a guilty pleasure because there's a lot of people online that play it. And so the variety of quality of people that you're playing. It's this real one-on-one gaming. So it's you versus your opponent. And the quality really varies. And so you can find games, 5-minute games, where you can just destroy someone. And if you're in the mood to just like, you're like, I know I'm better than like most people who play this game. If you're just in the mood to go out and beat someone, I do that. And that's that's a bit harsh for me to just go out and just like, oh, I'm going to enjoy beating someone right now.
You know, it's better to beat them online than in person.
That's true.
With a stick. But
yeah.
Like, I'm just saying.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point.
It's a good question because honestly, you should always have those fallback games that you're willing to play. And like I say, as much as I'm into board games and stuff to say, yeah, you know, I like just breaking out a deck of cards and playing Euchre, which doesn't even use the full deck of cards. It's, yeah. Kitty, do you have anything for us or shall we move on?
I'm still looking. I'm finding a lot of really fun looking dexterity games. So while I'm trying to find this one. It's not Topple. I always think it's called Topple, but it's not.
Well, you look that up, and I will read Lucas's, friend of the show. Howdy, guys. I'm a bit odd in that I actually prefer cooperative games over competitive ones. I'm wondering which cooperative board games is y'all's favorite and why? Bonus question. What about mini versus one semi-co-op games? For example, Letters of Whitechapel or Fury of Dracula. Well, funny you should ask.
Yeah.
So Josh just mentioned we're Pandemic Legacy has been kind of our go-to game for a while.
Love it.
We have still 3 months left. Getting the three of us together isn't a big deal. Getting Spencer in the room at the same time so we can finish it. It takes us a little bit longer. Gloomhaven, obviously, is a co-op game that I've been playing. I played a game just the other day with Sydney and
I'm so jealous. And these guys are like steaming ahead. I need to watch some videos of how to play that game.
Yep. Suspend.
Suspend. There we go. Now everyone cannot be suspensed anymore now that we know it's suspend. we just played Josh's first one versus mini today.
Yep.
So not alone.
Not alone. A Stronghold game, right?
Yep. Soon to be published by Stronghold.
Soon to be.
Yep. And I love one versus mini games because it allows me to teach a game, take on that role of the one, play a little bit more of a complex game because you're playing against a team, but then everyone else gets to kind of gang up against me because they're going to do that anyway. So it works out.
And I like this game because it really had that meta feel, because the whole point of the game is that two people fighting the one, or the however many people fighting the one, are choosing which location they're going to go to. And the one's job is to find out which location they're going to and block them. And it's a real like mind game of like, okay, she's going to think that I'm going to go there. So I'm not going to go there, but then she'll probably know that I'm going to do that. So now I've got a double, triple bluff. And it was the tension. I just had to keep my face blank.
And you could have table talk between Not Alone, which is our game of today. So we're kind of jumping around, but you have the creature, who's the one, and then you have the hunted, who's the rest of the group. And the hunted can talk to each other, but the creature can overhear everything they're saying. You can't whisper or say anything that the creature can't hear. So we played two games of this. Kitty lost both times.
I did.
But that's because you were a hunted at the beginning and I was the creature. And then we switched. And then Josh and I were the hunted and you were the creature. But it seemed fairly, like our first game, we were still kind of learning it, but it seemed pretty balanced with like the chances of the teams, different teams winning.
It did. I think you had some really good draws as the creature. And I made a couple kind of errors when I was playing the creature, but it was still very close.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we just knew as well better. You know, the first playthrough when Chris was the monster, like we didn't really know what we were doing, me and Kitty. But once Kitty had then assumed the role in the second game, me and Chris knew what we were doing a lot better. It was easier for us that way.
I also think Chris is very good at guessing what I'm thinking. Well, it was me he caught almost every time.
I was targeting. That's true. But the game plays up to 7, so you can play it from 2 to 7. And I played it with Sydney and I, and we played it, and it was pretty close. And then the 2 3-player games that we played, 7...
We were within 3 spots of each other.
Yeah.
At the end of both turns.
Yeah.
Both games.
So, and when you get to 7, you play your turn simultaneously, and then once everyone reveals, you resolve. So the game doesn't really scale that much in time, even when you scale with players. And it's a small box game, so it's a small box one versus mini. So I highly recommend this game. This is a really cool game.
It's good fun.
If you're looking for a good, more involved One Versus Many. I think we've talked about it many times. The betrayal at the house on Haunted Hill.
Yep.
That one's a really good one.
Yep. And I still need to get The Others, which is Eric Lang's horror One Versus Many, to the table. It looks really, really good.
Is it Nicole Kidman?
It is not Nicole Kidman.
No one there understands is a film. There is a film. Thank you, Josh. Yeah,
The Others.
I know. And it was a horror film, too, and a really good one. No, this is a different Others.
There's I don't know if it was a really good one.
I liked it. I liked the suspense of it, though. But if you haven't seen The Others and you like suspense, go watch Nicole Kidman's The Others. There's a twist. New games I own. I actually found myself at a Gaming Goat in Elmhurst, Illinois. And I talked to Dane, the manager, as I walked in. I was visiting a friend across the street. And I'm like, oh, there's a game store over there. I'm going to walk over there. So Dane greets us and says hi. And he's been in business for about 3 months. And these guys, they give 30% off all retail game purchases in the store, which is like, oh, okay, that's, yeah, I'll buy. So I ended up picking up Great Western Trail, Fog of War, and Innis, which are Great Western Trail and Innis are very hard to find right now because they're kind of out of print. Well, you'll learn more in just a few minutes about Great Western Trail's reprinting. But I really, really friendly guy. If you're in Illinois and near Elmhurst, go stop in at the Gaming Goat because those guys are really cool over there. Let's see. Kickstarters and pre-orders. Empires of the Void is a new Red Ravens game by Ryan Lockhart. A little over 2 weeks left on this one. It's a space theme game. It's Ryan Lockhart, and it's the deluxe version is what they're kickstarting. It has metal coins in it. It has all kinds of extra stuff and stretch goals. This game is $60 on Kickstarter. The normal version will be $80 when it's released. So if at all this sounds interesting to you, go check out Empires of the Void. And then the other one I backed was Farlight. This is another space-themed game. And I found this because I follow Ryan Wolf, who does a lot of space miniatures that I buy and spaceship maps. And he backed this. And again, it was $25. And it looked really quite fun. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to grab this one too. It has a little over 3 weeks left. Let's see. We already talked about our game
of
the day.
We did. We already covered Game of Today. Not yep. Alone.
Not
thumbs
alone.
Up.
Not alone. We like it. And I already talked about our side chat episodes. Looks like we're going to have side chats every Friday. Like all of this month, we're going to have side chats. So it's going to be fun. I will say, if you're listening to this episode and you like Gloomhaven, you should probably pay attention to the feed come this Friday. I'm not going to say anything more than that. So on that note, anything else to say before we get to talking to Steven?
Nope.
All right. Well, we're going to do the magic of time travel, and we're going to go talk to Steven right now.
In this episode, we're talking to one of the nicest guys in the industry, Steven Bonacore of Stronghold Games. We have some of our own questions. We have some of your questions. Now let's get some answers. Steven, welcome to the show and thank you for being here.
Hey, thank you guys for inviting me. It's always a pleasure being on podcasts. I'm only on 300 of them, a year. So
yeah,
I really enjoy doing this and I'm happy to be here for you guys as well.
Well, yours is one I listen to quite well every time you drop it, every other week and occasionally if there's an interview here and there. So
thank you. Yeah. Board Games Insider. Thank you for the passover on that one. Right. You can reach us at boardgamesinsider.com or wherever you're, wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, etc. And that's Ignacy Chevychek of Portal Games and Steven Bonacore of Stronghold Games. And we basically try to go 30 minutes in and out and give you what's happening in the industry and ways to get into the industry. It's just really trying to peel back the curtain of what we do as publishers and as what Nasi does as designers. So it's we get a lot of good feedback on that. So I'm real happy that you're listening to us as well. It's great.
Yeah. No, I really love it. I mean, you guys give an insight into the industry that you don't necessarily get from, just reading up on what the latest games are. So and we get to hear about the latest games from you guys as well. So that's always fun.
Yeah, thank you.
But that's actually a pretty good segue into my first question. So you are a publisher. As far as I know, you haven't done any game design. Is that correct?
Not of any note. Let's okay. put it that way. That's correct.
Yep. So
I am a publisher and never have thought to be a designer, really.
Yep. So our audience is, I would say, casual to moderate gamers, I think. At least that's how we talk to. So we might be talking down to some people, hopefully not. But what does a publisher, like the difference between a publisher and a designer? Can you just throw that out there? What do you do as a publisher?
We make the games. I mean, you know, that thing sitting on your shelf out there is my handiwork. So we start with the game design. It either has come to us from a designer and he had an idea and we build it from ground up, or he had a prototype that he showed us, and then we have to take that and change that into the physical product. And that includes all portions of it, including, making sure the rules are written correctly and clearly, and working with the actual factories that do this printing, because nobody owns their own factories, not even the largest companies in our industry. Even Hasbro they had some factories, but they've sold them off as far as I know. So, we create the game. We have to do the actual physical work of bringing the designer's thought process to life.
So if a designer was to bring you a game, and I'm only asking this on behalf of the listeners because I've heard the answer to this like 50 times, I'm sure. If I have a game and I want to get it published, what should I do? Talking to you or someone like you is sort of the first, well, actually I'd say probably the third or fourth step. The first step is how does someone do that? Like, how would they get a meeting with you to say, hey, look at my cool game?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of steps before you get to a publisher. And I think you kind of, implied that, you really want a solid game design. You can't really have this idea out there, unless you are like, a designer of extreme note. That's just not going to fly with most publishers. You want to have a very, very, very well play tested game. You want to have that game that's gone out to blind play testing, instead of just your friends and your family and your mom who's going to tell you you're the greatest thing in the world and that game is the greatest thing. You have to have people that you don't know actually play test the game as well, which you can do at conventions. You can do it literally. Board Game Geek people there are willing to do it for you. Once you have that, you're going to try to find companies that match the style of game that you have designed. So you have to know the industry. You have to know, if you're doing light party games, who's really doing that? If you're doing deep, meaty, heavy duty Euros, well, who's doing that? So find those companies. And the first thing to do is start with general emails. I have this game idea. I play tested, yada, yada, and get that out there and see what their process is of looking at designs. Now, the bad news is for most designers, and I have to write this email very often, in response, is I tell people I don't look at unsolicited game designs. There's just too many out there that come to me. We go through a very different way of getting our designs. Most of our games come to us from other publishers who don't have very wide distribution. So they come to us and they ask us to co-publish games. So most of the games I do right these days with Eggerspiele out in Germany, with Artipia Games in Greece, 2F Spiele is a German company, Spielworks is a German company. Most of the games come through them and I get them. Though I do have a stable of designers that I work with on a regular basis and others that I'm, where we're trying to work out some deals on. Jeff Engelstein is one of the designers I work with quite a bit, Andrew Parks. So those people can always have a way to get in. Yeah. But for that new designer out there, find the companies that are doing the kind of games that you do, reach out to them. And also, you really need to be going to the conventions where lots of publishers show up. You can't really get spontaneous meetings with publishers, or you shouldn't try to. You can't just walk up to a publisher and say, hey, I have this game, let's have a meeting. Because they already have full schedules most of the time, or they're just too busy. But if you're going to be at an Origins or a Gen Con or BGG Con or Essen, some of those big conventions, I mean, you should be going to them. Try to reach out to them beforehand and then say, I'll be there and I can show it to you in person. Much, much easier to get them to bite at that when you're there in front and showing them the game and showing them your vision than simply to send that email and just say, hey, can I send this to you? It's much easier to have that interaction right up there.
Right. Here's this 32-page rule book. Can you read this and will you publish it for me?
Exactly. That's a recipe for disaster in most cases.
Yeah. I just interviewed Andrew Parks a couple weeks ago.
Phenomenal guy.
Yep. Regarding Dungeon Alliance, which just funded today. So,
it did.
Yep. It was a few thousand shy with like 6 or 8 hours to go, and then all of a sudden $25,000 in the last hour. So that was really cool. I was really hoping for that to happen.
He's over $100,000 or just at the precipice right now with about 4 hours to go. He's a very good friend of mine. He actually lives in my neighborhood, so I've known him before, you know, there was a Stronghold Games before he was really a noted designer.
Yeah, I had a really good time talking to him, so I'm going to send him a congratulatory email right after this interview, just because I didn't want to jinx it, but it looks like he made all his stretch goals, so that's really cool. So I think, Josh, you had a question.
I did. I'm going to switch it up a bit, because I had a more broader sense one. I watched an interview with you, yourself and one of your industry friends at one of the trade shows, where you talked briefly about the fact that the industry's really changed a lot in the last 5 years. And I was just wondering if you could talk a bit about that, because I'm new to the hobby in the last sort of 9 months. And I think for people like me, I'm not really aware of kind of the big change that the industry's gone through in that time frame.
Well, that's a very broad question, but in general terms, the expansion of the industry has been phenomenal.
Right.
Not only are we talking about growth in sales, which obviously means growth in the gamer population. You're only 9 months in, as you just said. So someone turned you on to this hobby, and you've embraced it, and now you probably can't buy enough games.
And that person might have pulled you onto a podcast as well.
so we're going through this phenomenal growth, and it's, you know, from the ground up of bringing in new gamers. It's due in part due to to everybody else listening to this and bringing in their friends and their boyfriends and their girlfriends and their husbands and their wives. And Kickstarter, in no small terms, has helped this, because the barrier to entry now in the industry is very low. Anybody with an idea can get it up there on Kickstarter and see their project through. That amount of publicity, you know, marketing that you can get through that vehicle, and that low barrier to entry has made the amount of games out there, the amount of ideas out there, very, very high. For the most part, the quality of the games have gone up, but also at the same time, because there's a little bit less, you know, professionalism in some of what's happening with Kickstarter, because not everyone's a professional publisher. I mean, I've had people come to me, it's almost the funniest thing in the world. People come to me and said, yeah, we funded this Kickstarter and now we'd like somebody to go and do the game for us. And I was like, what? So, wait a minute, what are you asking? You're asking me, you had this idea, you put it up there, but now you don't know how to get it done. Right. So you can see it's a little bit of a Wild West. That's not even the majority maybe out there on Kickstarter, but there's definitely a big difference between what we have done. You know, all of the traditional publishers that don't use Kickstarter, or very little Kickstarter that we've done, that we have done from the beginning of this, and have grown the hobby, but now they've also this other smaller companies that are coming in and doing it in the other way. So it's just a huge, huge number of games out there, and a great growth in gamers and in sales due to this whole thing.
Yeah, we're going to do an entire show on Kickstarter in the very near future, because I'm addicted to it. I probably back 2 or 3 a week.
It's a problem.
Yeah, we're thinking about holding an intervention for Chris at some point.
Like, this is how I support the group. But yeah, so now one thing that's interesting is you've gone from part-time with Stronghold Games, where you had a full-time job, and, you know, speaking of growth of the industry, you are now full-time. So this has been only since you announced this at Gen Con, I believe, right?
At Gen Con, I announced that I was leaving my high-paying IT job on Wall Street and doing this full-time. And that was the reason why it was hard kind of to extricate myself from, you know, from that, because it, you know, I'd been in IT for 35 years. I'm a little older than you guys.
Steady and, money.
and, you know, very good money and, you know, very steady. But, you know, Stronghold has been doing better and better and better year over year. And I really, you know, from a financial perspective, you know, in like how much money one would need to live, et cetera, I could have done it a few years ago. But, you know, but it's just hard to leave the steadiness and the security of that.
Yep.
But finally, with the real growth that Stronghold did in 2015 and then 2016, where we just had an epic year. I mean, last year was, people were calling the lineup that we had out, you know, without, with the fall releases between Gen Con and the end of the year to just be a simply an epic lineup. Terraforming Mars, Great Western Trail, Fabled Fruit, Fog of War. I mean, game after game that has just made waves in the industry. It was time, and I couldn't do it anymore. I just could not keep my sanity, and I could not spend enough time to ensure the Stronghold Games was going to run well if I didn't leave. So the timing actually worked out perfectly. Said goodbye, closed down the IT job, and then rolled into this. So things are going great. So
thanks awesome. For notice. Yeah, no looking back.
Oh, there's absolutely not. I've told my old buddies in IT, I'm like, I will never work an IT job again as long as I live. I told them it's straight out because, I mean, not only is this, you know, gaming and this, you know, game publishing, you know, a passion, it's just so empowering to be one's own, to be one's own boss, right? Yep. To wake up in the morning and instead of getting up at 4:30 in the morning like I was doing on Wall Street, to get up at a normal hour, which is still ridiculously early, like 6 a.m., and to decide how the course of my day will go because I will chart the course of the company in so doing.
Yep. So let's start talking about some of these games.
Terraforming Mars.
That's a game. I heard of that game. That's a pretty good game.
Yeah. So we've got some questions here from our listeners about upcoming reprint.
Yeah, literally this week. So we're recording. Am I allowed to say? We're recording on March 1st, right, 2017. Mm-hmm. And on Monday, February 27th, the games rolled out of Ludofact USA. Yeah, final printing and final assembly is done in the USA for Terraforming Mars.
Nice.
Rolled out of there, arrived at the warehouse in Atlanta, Georgia yesterday, February 28th. And the games are already starting to roll back out now to distributors and to the people who order directly from me. So Terraforming Mars has been a ridiculous success. The first printing was sold out before it was even on the street, meaning that's called allocated when you don't meet the demand with the print run. And the printing of Terraforming Mars was the largest printing, tied for the largest printing I had ever done for a first time game. Other games I've done, like Survive, I print one full container at a time. They're always big printings because Survive, Escape from Atlantis, it's my biggest selling game and it sells over time every year, more each year. It's just a phenomenal gateway game. So your listeners, by the way, that's a great game for them if you're saying they're the lighter casual listeners. Everybody out there should check out Survive, Escape from Atlantis. Not because it's Stephen Bonacore's a Stronghold's game, but because that's my biggest selling game and it's that way for a reason. Terraform, of course, is a bigger, heavier game. So I did a very significant print run, and we were completely sold out. The demand was about twice what I could supply. So, of course, we geared up a second printing, and it's just coming out. Well, as it's leaving, the demand is twice this second printing, which was the size of this one was twice the first one. So it's absolutely amazing. So I've already geared up the third printing, which is twice the second printing. So you can see the scale of what's going on here. Mm-hmm. Really, really some serious numbers of games. We're getting into the scary kind of nature because when you commit to doing tens of thousands of units on a print run, and that is very atypical for printing a game in the hobby industry. But when you get into that scale, you're really talking some serious amount of capital that has to be committed. But Terraforming Mars is now, like, I think it's ranked like 17 on Board Game Geek and keeps going up. The gamers have embraced it in a big way. So I really think we're going to have legs with this game for a while. And with the expansions that we have already planned for the game, I think there's going to be, it's really going to continue for quite some time into the next couple of years.
All right. So speaking of terraforming Mars, we can go on to expansions. We've got Hellas and Elysium.
That's the first expansion. Uh-huh. Very good. Yep. And that one should hit around the time of the third printing, which is going to be around Origins timeframe. So in June, not only will that third printing come in, which if you miss this one, don't worry, you'll get to that third printing. Hellas and Elysium is going to be I wanted to actually call this just called the Terraform Mars, the other side of Mars, where essentially you're going to have a double-sided game board where you're going to be able to have a different setup, essentially. So you're going to be looking at different parts of Mars. The reason it's called Hellas and Elysium, which are Greek names, because most of Mars is named after various places in ancient Greece. So there's Hellas Planitia and Elysium Planitia. And those are just locations there. So you're going to be on those locations on Mars. So it'll be a double-sided game board. That's the entire expansion, which will then be shrink-wrapped. And it'll give you new ways to set up the game.
I think it was funny when Terraforming Mars first came out, one of the complaints is, why is it only one side of Mars? It's like, because the board is flat, but now you're addressing that issue.
Because the board is flat, and I don't think it's really possible to make a spherical board, right?
Yeah.
And if anybody, the funny thing about Terraforming Mars is that it's as scientifically accurate as one could make it. The Frick's brothers and the Frick's family, you're not going to believe this, but they're a family of 9 brothers and 4 sisters, and all of them have a say in the company on one way or another. It's pretty amazing. Wow. Thing. Yeah. 13 kids. Yeah. The Jacob Frixilius is the actual last name. He is actually a scientist his real background, and he really did a lot of work in making the game accurate scientifically in all ways. So all those cards have got some basis, and the way that everything works, and the amount of oxygen you would need, and this, everything is supposed to be pretty close. So they wanted everything to be like that. So the map that you see in the current game, in the base game, is not one side of Mars. It's actually just one portion of one side of Mars. And this other two-sided game board is going to be two other portions. So in all of these setups, you're not playing on just like one, you know, round, just the part that you see of Mars on, you know, on a normal basis.
Right.
You're just, you're always in some area of Mars. So we've now given you two additional areas to play on.
Awesome. All right. Now, there's also, I believe, 3 other expansions planned. Am I getting that rumor right?
You got it exactly right. The second expansion is going to be done hopefully for Essen, which is in October. So the release would be October, November by the time it gets to the U.S. And that's going to be called Terraforming Mars, Terraforming Venus, or just Venus. We don't know the exact name yet. And this will be like a Venus sideboard. It'll be a little more abstracted, where you will be able to place certain tiles there, but many less. So there'll be some key tiles to be placed on Venus, and there'll be new cards to be inserted into the deck. I don't have all of the details on that, but it'll be a slightly larger expansion than the Hellas and Elysium expansion. But that game also had been developed in the amount of time that it took us to get the base game out, because we actually delayed it with them for about a year. It was supposed to come out in 2015 at the end of the year. We brought it out in 2016. We wanted to make sure that was right. So in the meantime, they continued doing development on all 4 of these expansions, and they were able to put enough time into it so that one should now hit by the end of this year. And then we have 2 unnamed, I don't have the names for them, and neither do they probably yet, 2 more expansions that we're going to be adding in probably 2018 and even into 2019. So that's at the moment, that's the whole world of Terraforming Mars and what our look is. And I'm hoping even more stuff will come out, you know, for this IP as time goes on.
So I'm going to jump to a quick question so we can wrap up the Terraforming Mars series of questions. But Files from Reddit has asked, is there any chance of a deluxe version of Terraforming Mars? So, you know, with maybe enhanced player boards or, you know, just, you know, heavier stock cards or anything like that, or maybe like a, you know, anthology edition where all the expansions are in one. Maybe that's too early to talk about.
I think you kind of nailed it on the head with, you know, once maybe we go through and get the four expansions in place, then who knows? Then maybe there's a full deluxe edition,
an ogre-sized box.
It's come up in discussions, but we're focused right now on bringing out and keeping this game hot and fresh in gamers' psyche. So we're going to continue down the road with current edition and then expanding it with these four expansions, which, you know, will definitely run through at least 2018, if not into 2019 with these. And we'll definitely take a look and see what we're going to do, you know, thereafter with any kind of deluxe edition.
Awesome. What about other games? So we know Terraforming Mars is big, but what other games are we to look forward to this year?
Well, this year coming, we've announced a whole bunch of things already. Before that, we move on from the stuff from last year, though, I don't want to leave out just a couple of other big hits. The Great Western Trail sold out was also allocated upon it coming out, and that's a game by Alexander Pfister, and that is a super heavyweight game. So that's maybe not for everybody out there, but I just want to mention it because it also jumped onto the scene and is now ranked already in the top 50, like 48 or 49 or something like that. I just want to bring that up. And as well as the a game called Fabled Fruit, which introduced a whole new system called the Fable system. So like legacy games where you actually physically change the game and the game changes over time, we created this with 2F Spieler where the game system will evolve over time, but not in a destructive way or in a way that changes it completely. You can restart the game from the beginning or start it in the middle. Both of those games were sold out immediately upon release, and they'll both be back out again by mid-April in the U.S. So I just wanted to mention those before we got on to 2017.
Yeah, actually, I should pre-order those because somehow I ended up picking up Dragons and Flagons and Terraforming Mars at Gen Con.
Excellent.
But I did not pick up Great Western Trail or Fabled Fruit, even though I've heard tons and tons of things about it. So April, eyes are open.
There you go. Yeah, so you were one of the first people to get both of those games because that was the first time either of those games had showed up. They both showed up for the first time at Gen Con. We had a limited number of Terraforming Mars and the Dragon and Flagon, and both of those games were sold out in three and a half hours. So. Yeah,
I got the very last copy of Dragon and Flagon. I'm like,
that's funny. Did you really?
Yep. I'm like, there's no more around. Yoink.
So that was like at 1:30 in the afternoon, I think, on Thursday. Yeah. About 3.5 hours into the convention, gone.
Yep.
So it's one of those good problems to have. but you can never anticipate. Mm-hmm. So this year, we've already announced a slew of games for this year, from the smallest of the smalls to, again, some pretty decent weight games. The next one out is a very small game. It's in what I'm now calling my micro line. We released something called Fuji Flush last year, which is a 3-to-8 player, almost a party game, very fast, 10-15 minute game. Now we're doing a game just also small in that very, very small box size with just cards in it called Get the Cheese. In the back, it says it's a game of cat and mouse and dog. You play a family of mice, and each of you play a different family of mice rushing into a house to try to get the cheese, try to eat the most cheese and get it out of the house as fast as possible. But of course, not only do you have opponents doing the same thing, other families of mice, but you're going to be able to play your mice down, but you're going to be able to play cats to try to scare away other people's mice, and dogs will be scaring away the other players' cats. So you're going to be like one-upping each other like that. Cards are played face up sometimes, face down sometimes, based on where they are and how they are played on this tableau that's in front of you. It's a light game that you can even play with your kids. You can play with kids probably as young as 6 years old if you want it. They will not get the subtleties. It really is more of a really kind of thinky strategy game when you peel back the onion a little bit. So that's going to be a cute little game in that new line for us. Excuse me. one of the our next big release, and I think is one that's going to be like sold out again, and I'm already commissioned, even though it's not out yet. My sales agent said they're going to need more of this game. It's called Not Alone. And Not Alone is a one versus many game. It plays 2 to 7 players. One person plays the creature, and everybody else are playing these astronauts. They've crash landed on this planet far away, and now they are looking to try to get rescued. So they've sent out a rescue beacon, but they realize there's somebody, something else on this planet. They are not alone. And they're going to visit various locations. There are a bunch of cards on the table. They're going to visit these locations, and the creature, the one player playing the creature, is going to try to find them and suck their will away. And the more they can do that, the more he will assimilate them into the planet itself. And basically steal their souls away. So it's who can race to the final goal. Will the creature get to the center, or will the astronauts make it there to the center section? And it's trying to one up each other. Can I figure out where you're going to go? Can I anticipate? Can as me as the creature anticipate what you need to do to keep yourself going and to stay away from me? It's called Not Alone, and that's one of our May releases.
Yeah, I actually picked up an early copy of this. I just happened to be in the game store, and there was a copy there. I think this was actually shipped from overseas or something, because it doesn't have the Stronghold logo on it yet, but it's right. The same game. I played it 2 days ago with my fiance, and this game is cool because I really like one versus minis, but there's a lot of times it's a really big setup and you have to kind of all these board and pieces. This is throw 10 cards out there, that's your planet, and then everyone gets a hand of cards, and you just kind of go at it, and it's really kind of just guessing what other people are going to try to do. It's a lot of fun, and it plays very quickly as well. And we played it at 2 players, and it scales all the way up to 7. So this one's a fun one.
It scales very well, you know, through the entire range. I mean, it was like all these kind of games with the higher player counts, but it's good to hear that you're getting plays in just with 2, and you're still liking it. That's really cool.
Yep.
Before I even mention the next game, at Essen, Stronghold Games obviously did very well, right? We had all these a lot of these releases I just mentioned on the Geek Buzz at Essen. That's where, like, you know, gamers go, and they go over to the Board Game Geek booth, and they enter, like, you know, what they like, right? They say, they give thumbs, and then the one with the most thumb is going to be the number one on the Geek Buzz, and then they'll be the number 2, et cetera, et cetera. So at Essen, Stronghold Games had 3 games in the top 10 on the Geek Buzz. Terraforming Mars was number 1. No shock there. The Great Western Trail ended up at number, I think, 5 or 6 on the Geek Buzz. And Fabled Fruit, which I mentioned before, ended up as number 9 on the Geek Buzz. Since then, we picked up Not Alone, which ended up at number 10 on the Geek Buzz. And the 5th game that we had. So we in the end had five games on that Geek Buzz, 2 of them coming later. That 5th game was number 2, I believe, on the Geek Buzz, and that's Cottage Garden by Uwe Rosenberg. Now, if Uwe Rosenberg is one of the really, really great designers in the industry, been responsible for many, many top games, and putting him into my catalog is a real honor for me. And I don't know if you know, I've created this thing called the Great Designer Series. Are you familiar with that?
Yep.
Thank you. Yeah. So I did that to recognize, you know, people who have really done great things for the industry. And Uwe Rosenberg, as soon as we pick up his game, boom, we put it right in. This is number 8 in our Great Designer Series. So this is a game where you're creating these lovely gardens, which, you know, farming and these kind of, and all these kind of things with crops and things like that is a very big theme. So Cottage Garden is following in that. It uses the engine that he created with a game fairly recently called Patchwork,
yep,
which was a 2-player game. And now he's extended it to up to 4 players. You can play it from 1 to 4 players, and you're drafting these Tetris-like pieces that you're going to be fitting onto one of 2 gardens in front of you. When you fill up the garden with your with your flower beds and various pots and even cats. You can have sleeping cats in your garden to take up some space, and then you'll score that garden and you'll bring a new one in. And the person in the end who has scored the most in these gardens is going to be the winner. It plays very quickly. It is also a lightish game. So you have this game by a great designer who normally does much heavier games, but he's done this relatively light one that plays fast and quick. And I'd have your listeners take a look at Cottage Garden.
Yeah, we're big fans of Patchwork. We actually, for our Valentine's Day couples games episode, Patchwork was talked about a lot, I think. So this sounds like this is a 1-4 person variant of Patchwork.
It's exactly what it is.
Yep.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it.
I'll play it. And then I also know that you're doing Fields of Green, which is a game I kickstarted because, you know, addicted and all. Another really great pickup by you as well, because that one's a lot of fun as well.
Right. That was Artipia who did the Kickstarter, and they're one of our strategic partners. So we get to choose the games that we want to do by them, do with them after they do that initial run on the game. It had a lot of great buzz. Hey, another game about farming too.
Yep.
Modern farming too, which is very interesting, right? So this is like 21st century modern farming where you uses the engine that the same designer used in Among the Stars, which is a card drafting game a la Seven Wonders, where you're going to take a card and you're going to place it physically in front of you, and the placement in front of you, you know, must be orthogonally adjacent to another card, and how close it is to something matters, or how far away it is to something matters. So he's taken that spatial relationship that he used in Among the Stars and now applied it to this, you know, modern farming theme. He's changed the draft system a little bit so that you're drafting cards from known sets of cards. Can't remember the names. They're the different color cards that are in the game. You can draft based on those cards, and you put them up, and then you bring them all out together, and then people can pick them from the center there and play them into their tableau to create their great Field of Green.
Field buildings, something along the lines of tech, and one other one too. But yeah, so you're
there you go.
We're getting really technical here. Watch
much
out.
better than my memory.
Well, it's interesting because what it is there's four decks, and on your turn you can pick. I think you pick seven cards, and you can pick from any of the decks. You just have to pick at least one from each one, and then that forms your hand. And you pick one of those and pass the rest. So watching what other people are taking, watching what you're taking, do I want to take all these building cards because that's going to give away a lot of points? But that I want a good building, but then I'm going to have to pass the other buildings I don't draft.
Exactly.
So there's a lot. So
even though you're looking for buildings, you know, if you draft all those, you're only going to take one. The rest of them are going to go, and then the next player is going to hate draft you. Right? That's a great expression.
Yep.
Hate draft. They'll take that away because they know you wanted it, not to let it come back around to you again. So
right.
That's
they have actions where you can just toss the card you just drafted to do a different action. So I'm like, not only am I going to take this building, I'm not even going to use it. I'm going to throw it away and build a water tower.
Exactly. I love that.
So we're getting close to time, but we do have a few.
Take some questions from the listeners.
Yeah.
I don't want to make it a whole big Stronghold Games commercial.
We're just going to do we're going to try this. I'm surprised. I'm kicking or surprising Josh and Kitty with this too. They're used to it by now. We're each going to just go one at a time around and ask a question and see what happens.
Sounds good.
Sure.
So, Kitty, let's start with you.
I've got one ready.
Let's start with Josh.
This was kind of a crowdfunded question from Andrew FF, who says, are there any particular genres or mechanisms that you see emerging and dominating the gaming scene over the next few years beyond legacy games, maybe just becoming popular, more popular?
60 seconds, go.
Yeah, you know, if I had that, you know, I would be a multimillionaire. Right? I knew that. That's the game I would do. Well, I mean, I, you know, we kind of created something last year. I mentioned it, the Fable game. Right. And we're going to be coming out with yet another one this year. Freedom and Freeze just liked the way that we marketed it and did it. And it's done very well. So we're going to do that again. Dominating it, I think I'll call it emerging. I think that we're going to see other people using this, and we've even had an idea that, I mean, we're going to let people use it. It's not like I'm going to get, you know, we have it as Fable game, you know, trademark on there. Anybody can use it. If they came to me and said, we'd like to use it, I'd say, go for it. Give me a little credit there in the rules saying that, you know, you talked to us about it. I don't want any money for it. But hopefully that kicks off, you know, that takes on, you know, some legs. If I had any other ideas, I'd be making those games.
All right. From Cole Backslash, how's Dark Moon doing? Any chance for a second edition or expansion?
Dark Moon's doing fantastically. It's already in its second. It's already had two printings of Dark Moon. Don't need a second edition, certainly. I mean, you know, more printings. We're going to print it again. And we have an expansion in the works right now. I haven't announced the time frame, but I hinted at it on other podcasts. And I actually even recently posted on Twitter. I said, where could this art be? What game could this art be going to? And you can just tell by the art, the style of the art, because it's the same artist who's going to be doing it. You see by the style of art, and people immediately said, wait a minute. Those look like Dark Moon characters. And so they pegged it. So that was the Dark Moon expansion. And I'll tell you the name of it's going to be called Dark Moon Shadow Corporation.
Ooh. You heard it here first. As long as you didn't hear it anyplace else.
Yeah, I don't think I told anybody that. So you might have heard it there first.
Awesome. All right. My turn. I like this.
You off guard. Come on.
Mr. Glub Glub asks, what's next for Stronghold Games? Are you thinking about expanding, hiring staff in the coming years, or are you going to keep it, you know, you and you alone?
There's no doubt that I'm going to have to bring people on to keep the company going. I mean, I can't be in multiple places at once, amazingly enough. I mean, feels like I am, right? It feels like I have been almost over the past years. So to make it to certain smaller shows, and we may have some people traveling for us to make it to some of the trade shows. We may have some traveling people to do customer service. That takes the longest amount of work of all the things I do. It's a lot of work answering emails from people. So doing some of that. Hiring as in employees, maybe not, but, you know, bringing on more people that'll take on these tasks and then get paid like on a consultant basis. Absolutely. It's going to have to happen over the next, you know, year that I'll be doing that.
Yep. Nice. Actually, we've got one that kind of ties into this. Fly Lice Pick has Terraforming Mars being such a big hit help Stronghold Games level up, so to speak? Are you looking at bigger, better quality printings with even more better kind of component quality, etc., for future Stronghold Games?
With some people having said some things about Terraforming Mars's quality, which I'd like to rebuke for most of that, you know. I personally like flat player boards and not cardboard player boards. I mean, I can see them people saying, why, you know, maybe we could have put like slots in there for some of the cubes so that they didn't move around. I mean, no point taken on that. So we can do that. But I mean, I've never had people, you know, in the overall scheme of things saying, you know, the quality of my components has been poor. If you look, those cubes that we put into that game are off the hook. I mean, I think the first ones ever to do, they look like they're metallic. They're flat. They're a metallic bonded on top of plastic is what they are. So, you know, not going to change the overall direction of how we do our games. So that's probably not going to happen. But you know, we do the smallest games in like the Fuji Flushes and the Get the Cheeses. We do the biggest, most blown out games like what I did with Space Cadets Away Missions with, you know, over a hundred plastic miniatures in it. So, we're just going to continue. The goal of the company has been since the beginning to continue to bring out great games for gamers. And I don't, you know, every game that I bring out, you know, has me written all over it. I just simply stand behind and believe in my games as being great in what they are doing. They are great in the genre that they sit in, and that's what we're going to keep doing.
Yeah. Nice. I will defend Terraforming Mars a little bit because there has been definitely some things, but the problem is when you're at the top of the list, you're going to bring out all of those criticisms.
Yeah.
You know, because it's what else do you critique about this game?
Yeah.
It's like,
right.
Okay, it's a, you know, cardboard player board. So what? You know, that's the only thing you can find to complain about. You have a pretty good game there.
That's basically what I'm, where I'm at too. I mean, like, it's certainly, you know, it's not hurting the sales. And if you want if you want to upgrade your components for some reason, then there's about 10 companies out there that are doing these
aftermarket,
these wild things. I can't put those after. And see, I never understood that. To me, if somebody buys this game, whatever game it is, and they buy this great game, they love this great game, then to go out and spend as much on a box organizer or some upgraded component than they could have spent on just like another game.
Yep.
I mean, people have a certain love for the hobby, of course. Everyone has this love and passion for the hobby, so they want what they're doing to look the best in front of them. That's great. I personally would buy the next great game to sit next to it and to have some variety out there when I'm gaming. Yeah. But God bless everyone who goes out there and wants to bling out their stuff. That's great. Maybe I'm helping people by enabling a secondary market, and you know, people are obviously making money by creating these components as well. So that's cool with me.
Yeah, I know. I was at Dice Tower Con when I first met Steven, and you got the metallic cubes for the first time, and you're like, you got to look at these, and you're like, put them out on the table when we were playing Wizard Wagers, and I'm like, wow, these are really cool. And then
that's right. That was like, I think the first time I had just gotten them from my printer, I think, at Origins, and I brought them like 3 weeks later to Dice Tower Con. I kind of just spilled them. Now I'm like, that's what's going to go in the game, which, you know, to me, that was like just a really, really cool thing to have seen, you know, those beautiful metallic
cubes. They are super sweet. Yep.
They're very cool.
Yep. All right. We have time for two more questions. This one might be easy. April Balaga asking, is there going to be a reprint of CO2?
Well, the short answer is that it is definitely coming back. It's coming back from its original publisher, which is an Italian company, GOCX.IT. And they are basically doing a second edition of it. We are trying to get involved with that. We love the game. It was one of our earliest heavy Euro. They are an interesting company. We most likely we'll have it in our catalog as well. Worst case scenario, it will find its way to the US. I mean, I believe that we will have it back in print within the next 6 months.
All right. And for our last question, I think this is a good one from Andrew FF. If you, what is your most memorable gaming experience?
What is my most memorable gaming experience?
Or at least one of the top ones, if you can't think of the most.
I think that's hard because I mean, there's so much out there that like just, you know, makes you smile when you think about it, but they're so personal that it doesn't really translate as well. But I guess one of the ones that I'll just point to is that, you know, we recently, within the last, I don't know, 4 months, we finished Pandemic Legacy.
Oh, we're so close. Guys,
we're so close.
Let me tell you what happens at the end.
No! You dare!
I won't do that. Of course not. No spoilers. But, I love this, the concept of Legacy, where, you know, you play this and you have this wonderful experience, with your friends over this extended period of time. And then, you know, when it's over, you have this artifact of gaming. You have this game that you took through. You can bring it out again and look at it and say, remember when we did that? And the board has changed and this has been written on and stuff. It's so cool. So having that experience with my friends that we actually started it in January of 2016, and we played January and January and February and February. We were going along until about June, and then things broke apart and we just couldn't get it together. I'm traveling or somebody else couldn't make it. So we then basically, I think it was in like October or November, we basically said, okay, we're going to finish this. And then we ended up playing like August, September, October, November, and December, like within a couple of days or weeks. I forgot what it was. Really quickly, we played the rest of the game and we did really badly. So it was a great experience. And that's going to be one of those things that'll stand out in my gaming memory for a really, really long time.
Yeah, we have October, November, December, which we will marathon in an upcoming weekend for sure.
Excellent.
Yeah, because now we have Gloomhaven before our Legacy kick. So we said we can't start that officially until we finish Pandemic.
I hear that is super hard. I can't wait till you guys stop playing that one.
Yep. Well, we actually have a giveaway going right now for Gloomhaven, which ends next week as this airs. And I accidentally pre-ordered two copies, which apparently is a good thing because nobody can get a copy of this. So I'm like, well, I'm just going to give it away. And so that's what we're doing for that.
Very cool.
So, and then finally, I do want to note Andrew FF, who got two questions in here, did want to say thank you for being so likable during the Dice Tower Marathon. And will there be wigs of your hair as a giveaway at Dice Tower Con?
What? What does that mean?
I have no idea.
No, well, that was a funny. I don't know why it came up on the Dice Tower Marathon, but my hair came up, and I think I probably said, like, I got really good hair for a guy of my age. Very little gray, and it's full. There's no balding going on. And then all of a sudden in the chats, they were like Bonacor wigs. We should all get Bonacor wigs. Like that started coming up, but no, there'll be no wigs being made of my hair. And it is real. It's 100% real good Italian hair here.
Yeah. My Italian hair is long gone. So, I mean, well, just on my head, everywhere else on my body, it's plenty fine. Too much information. All right, Stephen, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. If people want to know more about you, where can they find you? Where can they contact you? And we'll plug your podcast again too.
Oh, thank you very much for that send off there. Thank you for having me. Of course, Stronghold Games is at strongholdgames.com, and you can sign up for our newsletter. We get one out about once a month or whenever I get around to doing it. We're active on Twitter, so you can follow us there at Stronghold Games is on Twitter. And then our Facebook page is /Stronghold Games. The podcast, as we mentioned at the top of the show, is Board Games Insider, which you can do at boardgamesinsider.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And it's a very fast 30-minute in and out with Ignacy of Portal Games. We talk about how the industry works. Thank you again so much for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it. This has been fun. I hope you guys had fun. Hope the listeners enjoyed it.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Thank you.
And thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. And that was us talking to Steven.
Wow, he really, really was like the nicest guy, I've got to say.
He really was. Yeah. Very nice.
Yep. And he gave us the scoop on the Dark Moon expansion.
So cool.
So that's good. And he is going to sponsor our next contest. Giveaway. So our next giveaway will be something.
We're gonna put
Stronghold
a rubber
game.
Band on your wrist. Yeah. And snap every time you say contest.
So it'll be good. But yeah, no, we talked to him a little bit off the air, and he's like, no, he would love to do that. So he's gonna give one of his newer games coming out. I believe that one probably won't be out till April, he said. But once we'll run the contest giveaway, and and it'll be all good. All right, let's get out of here before I do anything worse. Are you ready to read, Josh?
Sure. Well, thanks for listening, and remember, we love your feedback, so consider leaving us an iTunes review or email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. you can also reach us on Facebook at /tabletopgametalkpodcast or on Twitter at tabletopgametlk, and reach us directly at GameMasterChris, at JoshesBlonde, and at KittenL. And if you like what you hear, help us spread the word by liking or sharing our posts. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Giljam, Lucas Hartso, Charles Finch, Jade Pedersen, Shane Poole, Trevor Olson, Rudy Liu, and Sam from NY, Brian Arnold, Josh Arntz, Michael Oll, C. Marie, Daniel Shepherd, Sean Keeley, and John Merkel. If you'd like to support us via Patreon, you can find out more at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. All patrons are auto-entered into all our contests with bonus entries, so check it out.
All our giveaways, too.
Until next week, when we break out of the serious board games and talk drinking games. Woo! Keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.